have a lot of people that have been captains of ferry services or have been deck hands. And so we'll be hiring an operator. Obviously, we're going to be heavily involved with that. We really want to be hiring as many locals as possible. And I have heard from some retired captains that are retired here in the Portland-Vancouver metropolitan area. And so we'd love, love, love to hire here locally. But there's just so much kind of rigor behind the regulatory side of the operation that at least to start, we need to hire an operator that really knows what they're doing. So those are really areas of focus for next year.
Yeah, sounds like you are going to be busy. Susan, what is the website?
The website is frogferry.com.
Easy enough. Susan Bladholm, founder and president there of the Frog Ferry, coming soon to a river near you in Portland, Oregon. I really do appreciate your time today on the show. Thank you.
Thank you, Trevor.
Past episodes of the program can be found wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you to the letter J, Cody Robertson, for original music. My name is Trevor Collins, and I can be reached, trevor@timeslikenow.com. I look forward to speaking with you all next time.
The following program is a special encore rebroadcast for these unique pandemic times. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred and are no longer relevant.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Add him on my whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver scream. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Fanny Curtut. She is the art historian behind the show Beyond Van Gogh, the immersive experience, which opens at the Oregon Convention Center on November the 19th. And it's a show of projected paintings by Van Gogh and animations. Fanny, talk to me by Zoom from Montreal. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Fanny.
If you want to start from the experience, the whole goal is to take the audience through this journey. And so not have from the get-go only setting foot in what we call the immersive room. It's really about going through different stages. You have three rooms. The first one that we call the introduction hall, which is really about getting to know Van Gogh. So it's about providing texts and quotes from Vincent to get the audience to know more, especially with somebody as notorious as Van Gogh, as famous as him. There's sort of this double edge to this level of notoriety where people tend to only remember mostly the negative aspect of his life, almost his legend, this myth of the suffering, troubling, tortured artist, the struggling Matisse, the poverty, the ear-cutting incident. And all of this is true, but only to a certain extent. And also, it tends to get in the way of the appreciation of the sheer power of the work itself, because all of this darkness, that's not what you see when you look at Van Gogh's work. You see light, this movement that we think about with Starry Night. You know, we remember this swirling sky more than anything. We remember the vividness of the colors. When you're in front of an original, you want to touch it because it's so powerful, it's so bright, it comes at you. And in a way, that's why he was such an easy fit for this kind of tool, because you don't have to do much to sort of breathe new life into it. There's already movement. There's already this play of complementary colors that moves your eye through the paintings. And so it was all about providing this journey for the audience to get to know him better and to see, to focus really on the power of the colors in his work, the power of the movement, the joy that it has, the sort of healing quality of nature that he puts into his work. The audience goes through that. And then through a second room that we call the waterfall room, which really has this impression of pixels and colors flowing through. And it's really, it acts as a portal to sort of prepare the audience for the type of experience that they're going to have. And then you get to the immersive room, where you get to literally walk
through
the colors.
Well, assuming people really just want the last bit, what's in it for them to take their time going through the first room? Just educational?
You have a lot of different types of people going to these type of experiences. So you have people reading all of them, you have your people reading some of them. There's a quality, there's an atmosphere, and you have these quotes that are there that are very short and that are very easy accessible. But from experience, people do read and they get to the waterfall room and then the immersive room, and then some of them will stay longer there. Some people will stay longer in the first room. But I think like any type of experience, you can't really have one public in mind. You need to cater for all type of audiences.
Is it a 1 hour limit?
It's not limited. It takes about an average of 1 hour. The only limit that it will have is if the number of people in the room gets really out of control compared to the limitation. But I would say it's an average, people stay usually for an hour.
Mm-hmm. Is it structured around the biography of him, birth to death, or is it more like, does it peak with his supposed most important paintings?
With him, it's sort of easy to sort of have in the background, I would say, a sort of chronological journey, but not in the sense that we wanted to start with his biography. It's more in the sense that when he started learning by himself, he has much darker paintings, like the potato eaters at the beginning, much darker shades. But if you put them all one side by side in a line, all of his paintings of his 10 years production, you really have this evolution from darkness to light. He gets to Paris, he meets the Impressionist, and then he gets to Arles, and then you have this explosion of complementary colors that we know him for. So of course, we have this tram of going from darkness to lightness and the bright colors.
Is it structured, like when you're in the immersive room, do you feel like you're in one painting after another?
It depends, because there are some paintings that are, I would say, standalone moments. So you have one scene that's dedicated, for example, of course, to Starry Night, and that's unavoidable. But you have another one that's dedicated to the Starry Night on the Rhône, which is another painting that he did. Another one that's focused, for example, on Almond Blossom. But other scenes are compositions of many of his paintings put together, for example, in Auvers-sur-Oise, where you get really a sense of this color going wild and this brush strokes getting much more animated at the end of his life. The idea with this is, since you have these tools, this idea of just one image to the next, for example, when we are in class, art history, we used to have a lot of that. And so just one image and then you skip to the next. And the idea is not to do that. You have these incredible tools that are there to provide a different story, that are there to move you and to move and come at you. They're bringing these paintings to a whole new scale. And so it was really to use the potential of these tools. How can this cutting edge projection technology marry with this more traditional static image of a painting with Vincent van Gogh's production? So it's really about finding this balance in between, this dialogue between these tools, this technology, and his body of work.
I haven't seen it yet, so could you just tell me, take a famous painting, is the animation a narrative? And then are you kind of limited, like you only can do it for 30 seconds and you sort of run out of elements or movement?
Oh, no, it depends. There's not one painting that's treated the same way. For example, A Starry Night, when it starts, the scene with Starry Night, it starts with almost an abstract, entirely abstract version of the painting, because it's like it's getting into place, it's setting into place. And the only thing that you have is this movement. Does this movement, these lines that have these very particular twirling motion, and everybody recognize it instantly because people know this movement more than the colors, more than the church that's in the bottom, more than the cypress tree touching the sky, more than the landscape. They remember the movement. And so in this case, it's evocative of his style, and it's about using these tools to really put that forth. Anybody who knows art can easily identify Van Gogh, but that's the thing with him. Even somebody who doesn't know much about art or know much about him can still pretty easily identify a Van Gogh because of these brushstrokes, because of this movement. In another scene, we have one of his paintings that was thought until 2019, I believe, to be his last. And we have a movement that crosses through it, which is another type of turbulence, which indicates not clearly, but just symbolically, sort of the troubling, because we're getting to the end of his life. That's the field where they found him once he shot himself. And so you have another type of movement that comes in that's more unsettling, that has more of a narrative symbolic behind it. So it's really about every time connecting what these tools can do with what the painting can do, but without losing the essence of what the paintings are. So it's not about changing the colors. It's not about changing the style that he has of, for example, blending colors. He didn't blend colors. Why would we do it? So it's all about finding, like, these dialogues. What can these tools do with keeping the essence of this work?
And who are the people who chose how to animate? Is it one person, a director? Is it a team?
It's very much a team. Like any team, we have a director, though. So there's an artistic director. It's called Mathieu Saint-Arnoux. And you have animators, a lot of them, because it takes a lot of work to do these things. And so it was a discussion between the head of animation, the artistic director, and me, and choosing the paintings and what can we do with them. The freedom of the tools is immense. And I was there to sort of provide the point of view of art history. There's a freedom to animate, but to a certain point, but also keeping to the essence of what the work tries to say, or we want to show what we think the artwork is saying. For some people, going to the museum is something intimidating, or it's something that they associate with something uninteresting that has no connection with their lives. And this type of experience is meant to sort of provide a different access to the art world. And my hope is that once they're in it, they'll develop this connection to Van Gogh. And next time they're in a town where a museum has a Van Gogh on its wall, maybe they'll be curious about seeing that. Mm-hmm. Because, for example, I would think it would be harsh not to include Starry Night in an experience like this, because people know it. And when you know something and you recognize it, if they go, for example, to New York and they go to MoMA and they see Starry Night on the wall, the connection will be different. And so creating an experience like this is creating another bridge, another access point into the art world. So it's really not about changing Vincent Van Gogh's work. It's about providing a different way of experiencing it.
When you talk about the tools, what software are you talking about? And then what projection mapping, or what type of projection?
That would be a great question to ask Mathieu Saint-Arnoux, but unfortunately not the art historian of the project. So I have very little idea of all of this dark magic and how it works. What I can tell you is that there are a lot of projectors, a lot of people working on them.
So I went to a thing in New York, in Chelsea, in August. I think it was called Ars Technica. And it was a room where just sort of sat on the floor, and there was like animated computer animation of, like, it was kind of like a video game. There were lots of fractally buildings coming at you, and it was going up the walls and up the ceiling and all over you. And it was kind of a passive experience. What's the third room like in this show? Are you encouraged to, like, chill out, or do you have to focus on something?
It depends, because every scene is different. The room in itself has three monoliths, and so three or two, depending on the city where they are. And the idea is that they sort of hide certain points of the room, and so they are there to sort of encourage movement, so that you walk through them, because on some sides of the monolith, you won't have the same image. And mm-hmm. sometimes that's the only place where you'll see that particular painting. So it's about not showing everything in one mm-hmm. simple swoop of the room. So, and you have some movement sometimes, for example, the almond blossom where the petals are sort of flowing around you and you feel it's almost like twirling when you have children in it. At that particular moment, they tend to run a lot. Mm-hmm. And so do you respond differently to the animation? But some people also are more contemplative in their approach to this type of experiences. Some people also have difficulty walking. So there are also some benches in the experience for people also to sit down if they prefer and have this sort of mm-hmm. more contemplative vision, but it's mostly made to be roamed around and to walk through it and to follow. The floor is moving, and so you want to play with it. A lot of people just try to take their foot in front of it and to just follow the lines and twirl at the same time. And like I said, the children, that's the best part that I saw, because like I said, we created it during COVID, so I saw it on my computer 13 inch for the longest time. And when I got to see it in the full space with children running in it, it was sort of magical. There's a lot of twirling. That's something that I did not anticipate, but a lot of people are just taking their phone and twirling, because I think it's probably one of the way they have to sort of express or represent the feeling that they have of being mm-hmm. entirely surrounded.
Yeah.
And so it is truly a different experience. There's nothing like the magic of an original, but there's something quite unique about the possibility of living this fantasy of going through the frame and really walking through this world of just shifting colors and movement. And so both are equally interesting. There's something almost surrealist of this experience, because it's not a documentary. You're not going through different stages of his life with a voice that's guiding you like an audio guide. It's not something that makes sense in the sense that it's an easy journey where you know where you are. It's you don't know where you're going, and you have all of these movements and you're switching scenes really like a dream. And so there is this quality about it that's just like a bubble out of your day where you get to be in a painting and you get to live in this world of color.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Fanny Curtat. She is the art historian behind the show Beyond Van Gogh, The Immersive Experience, which opens at the Oregon Convention Center on November the 19th. And it's a show of projected paintings by Van Gogh and animations.
Mm-hmm. Well, we in Portland, we've had recently, we had Frida the Opera put on by Portland Opera. It was outside because of COVID, but it was a real opera. Then this week we have Frida Self-Portrait, which is a one woman show by this Brazilian writer, actor, which is absolutely fantastic.
Ugh.
And then we have a Frida painting show coming up at the Portland Art Museum, which got put back a year because of COVID. There is this kind of appetite for these, you know, big name artists. They might be dead, but they're still alive in the culture, you know.
Especially her, I think she's really, really sort of the, like Van Gogh has been an icon for some time now, but I think it's important to have other figures, because art history still is pretty much a white male sort of thing, until Linda Nochlin asked the question in, I think it was 1971, why are there no great women artists? And it's true, there were some, but we just tend to not remember them as much. And they were token, pretty much, and not a lot of them. And so to have an artist and a woman of color getting this level of an icon status is just great. There is a price to pay when you become an icon like this. Your art becomes very much a commodity. And we see it with Van Gogh, we see it with Frida Kahlo. But again, can we fight against this tide? Is it worth it to fight against this tide? I'm not sure. But it's very cool to have this other type of icon and to have a woman. And Georgia O'Keeffe also is beginning. She's been always very important in North America, but now there's a big exhibit about her in Centre Pompidou in Paris. And it's a great opportunity for the European market to also see the power that she had and the influence that she had. Because again, we tend to have women in art history, but not give them the rightful place or the importance that other male artists have.
I was going to say that this technology, because it's so kind of vivid and, you know, wrap around, it's got mm-hmm. more power than the poster or the screensaver, you know, or other new ways that we can access great art. What do you think, like, long term, how could the technology be expanded? You know, bigger rooms, more animation, what?
I'm thinking that the next step would be interactivity. Because, you know, when you mention what are people doing in the room, they are walking, they are twirling, and you can see there's this appetite to almost touch it. And that's also part of the fantasy of the museum. I have this very, very strong urge that, of course, I will never do, but I would love to touch a Van Gogh. And I would love to have this other aspect of it. And I would think that interaction is probably the next step. So either having the environment respond in some way to the audience, or having some sort of choice that the audience can make that will change, for example, the course of the show, or what they want, or the angle. I'm thinking that that would be the next step, because I can see this urge of wanting to be in it even more. And that's the possibility that these tools have. Mm-hmm. Either it's something, you know, there are a lot of experiences also using VR mm-hmm. through these glasses and these lenses. And so there's no knowing truly where these tools will get us. But what these glasses allow us is sometimes to interact with stuff that isn't there, but that reacts to us in this virtual reality. And so you can see that there's still this pattern of interactiveness, interactivity, mm-hmm. that's coming towards us. And I would mm-hmm. say that that would be the next line.
Do you think if somebody enjoys this experience, it's kind of like a gateway to art history?
I would assume that they would start by getting to know more about Van Gogh. But then when you learn more about Van Gogh, sometimes you'll see the word Gauguin pop up. Maybe you'll see the word Monet pop up. And then if you Google that, maybe at some point you'll get to Picasso. Maybe you'll get to Dali and you're like, oh yeah, I knew more. And maybe the fact that you had this connection, I don't expect that we'll create a generation of art historian. But if at the very least people enjoy or have this feeling of recognition when they see a Van Gogh, and that this feeling becomes unique enough for them to seek it with maybe another artist or just a few more artists, then I think it's already something more. If just they get out also of this exhibit with a better sense of what can be relevant with a Van Gogh, for example, that it's not just a very, very valuable token that's for the very rich, but that there's a reason why he has that status. There's a reason mm-hmm. why a lot of art historians who are specialized in him, very often you'll have conferences or talks from them and their voice breaks because they get emotional about him, because you get to know him more intimately because of this correspondence with his brother. If they get the sense that there is something more than just a valuable object for an elite, that there is something about Starry Night and about the way he saw the world that is still relevant for them, that they can apply to their own life, then that's already a win. Already we've gone beyond the sort of icon, beyond the sort of myth, and already there's something there.
How many works is the show based on? How much access did you have?
we had access to everything because, like I said, he passed away in 1890. So his images are free of right. And we had 800 paintings to choose from. And if you had all of the drawings and the watercolors, that's 2,000 pieces total, over 2,000 pieces total. And so choosing the artwork, when you have the liberty of going through all of the body of work, that's where the difference comes from. It's very much about the story being told. So in this case, it's about going beyond the myth, beyond the darkness, beyond the legend, to really get to know more the work and see the impact of the work itself and Vincent himself.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Fanny Curtat. She is the art historian behind the show Beyond Van Gogh, the immersive experience, which opens at the Oregon Convention Center on November the 19th. And it's a show of projected paintings by Van Gogh and animations. Fanny, talk to me by Zoom from Montreal.
Thanks a lot, Fanny. Take care.
My pleasure. See you. Goodbye. Bye.
Like to take a cement fix, biggest standing cinema. Dress my friends up just for show, see them as they really are. But the people in my brain, two new pens to have a go. I'd like to be a gallery, put you all inside my show. Andy Warhol looks a scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all. Take a little snooze, tie him up when he's fast asleep, send him on a pleasant cruise. When you wake up on the sea, be sure to think of me and you. To think about paint and to think about glue, what a jolly boring thing to do. Andy Warhol, let's a scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all. Andy Warhol, looks a scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
está sintonizando KBOO Portland en el 90.7 FM y a través de la internet en kboo.fm.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7.